Good morning, everybody. Great to have you all here, even if I'm not. Go ahead and have a seat on this frosty morning. I understand it's really cold where you guys are right now, but where I am at the time that you're watching this, it's supposed to be about minus 30. So I'm not here, as you know, except on this screen. I'm up about 45 minutes north of Ely, on the edge of the BWCA, cross-country skiing with Chris and all our kids, which is pretty remarkable, and some great friends that we've had for years. So you can imagine me skiing through the snow-covered wooded hills in the minus many degrees Fahrenheit. We've been talking about relationships this month, what it means for you and me to be together. It isn't about learning four easy steps on how to have great relationships. It isn't that we don't know the right tricks. The problem is that we learned too many tricks. We've learned too many ways of being together that don't fit with how we're really intended to be together. And as long as you have some of these basic understandings, expectations, and hopes messed up, it doesn't matter how you tweak them, how you add to them, they still don't work. So it's time to take a look at what is really underneath all these relationships and what are these basic things about the way we're created and how we relate to each other that really help us have relationships that are true relationships. One of those basic components of life together is vulnerability. Right? Vulnerability, who really wants it? To be vulnerable is, you know, to be taken advantage of. It's to have something pulled over on you. It's to lose. It's to set yourself up for being hurt and taken advantage of. I mean, who needs that? In fact, probably the ski that I'm on right now is only being half enjoyed by myself because this vulnerable side of me is worried that all of you just said, "What? He's on video? Are you crazy? That's the dumbest thing in the world." And you're all out in the cafe having a cup of coffee waiting for a few more songs and you're gonna go home. Well, if you do that, don't tell me, okay? Fears of vulnerability. I don't know where they come from, but they just pop up in your mind and you want them to go away. And so you take the offensive. You try to be ahead of stuff on life. You try to push those kinds of things back. You try to keep things under control so that you know what's going to happen. And you aren't going to let anything happen to you that you don't want to happen. But as smart as that kind of living might be, there's a trade-off in it. And we give up something about who we really are when we live that way. There's this great story in the Bible, one that you are very likely familiar with, about David and his killing of Goliath. We hear that story as a story that is supposed to tell us about, you know, this amazing power, this new leader who's arising, and just as a kid he's able to slay this giant and stuff like that. But I really think there's something much more profound and much deeper, and it's talking about vulnerability that is in that story. I mean, what happens is that he hears that there's this giant Goliath up in the mountains threatening all of the armies of Israel, and all of Israel is afraid to go fight him. They're just scared silly. And he just can't believe, even though he's a little kid, he can't believe that no one will go out and fight him. And he says, "Well, I'll do it." And they said, "No, you can't do it. You're going to get killed." And he says, "No, I'll do it." He insists. And so the King Saul, who says, "Well, if you're going to go, at least let me give you my armor." Now, Saul is supposed to be like a head taller than anybody else, so he's huge. And David is just a young lad yet. And so you can imagine how this all fits. Listen to the story. Then Saul outfitted David as a soldier in armor. He put his bronze helmet on his head and belted his sword on him over the armor. David tried to walk, but he could hardly budge. David told Saul, "I can't even move with this stuff on me. I'm not used to this." And he took it all off. You probably know how it all turns out. David beats Goliath. But like I said, this is not a story about David being this fantastic warrior, about how God was powerful enough to let him beat this giant even without any armor. I mean, this is a message about vulnerability. It's telling us that all this stuff that he could try to protect himself, that he'd surround himself with, that seemed like it's supposed to help, really wasn't going to. If it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit, because it wouldn't let him be who he was. And that's what God is saying, is that I need you to be who you really are without all that stuff. In fact, I need you to be who you are to accomplish what I need you to accomplish, even if that means you're going to be more vulnerable. Maybe vulnerability isn't like a unavoidable byproduct of life. Maybe vulnerability is where life actually happens. In this world, we're taught to avoid vulnerability at all costs, but this is what God is trying to tell us. Vulnerability is not weakness. It is courageous. It's courageous to admit you don't have all the answers. It's courageous to give up trying to arm ourselves with all sorts of things that society tells us we need because they will protect us from feeling want or pain or like we aren't good enough. Let me introduce you to Peter Rollins. Peter Rollins is a theologian, preacher, writer kind of guy who does a lot of thinking about this idea of vulnerability. And even when he isn't saying anything terribly profound, his accent makes it sound like he is. So enjoy, Peter.
Two things we want out of life are certainty and satisfaction. From when we're young, we believe that there's something that will make us whole and make us complete. And we take on stories that help us feel that we have the right answer, we have the truth. And I'm arguing that actually Christianity invites us into a place where we experience dissatisfaction, where we embrace our brokenness, and where we realize that we don't know the secret, that we're in the dark, and that the world is full of mystery.
Our faith may call us towards vulnerability, but that doesn't mean we like it, or that many people actually follow it. We spend most of our time, most of our energy, trying to avoid it, and like Saul was doing to David, trying to hide and protect ourselves from it. To avoid being vulnerable, we put a shell around ourselves. And that shell, that armor, is really convenient because it protects us. It keeps us from having to feel. After all, if we feel, we might get hurt. And that's what happens when you love someone too much. And when you stay behind that shell, it also keeps us from being seen. If we're seen for who we are, we might not be liked or accepted. We may not fit in. Someone may tell us that we aren't good enough. In contrast to that, God has a different idea. God wants us to cover ourselves not with a shell, but with something else. Something that doesn't minimize our contact with each other, but maximizes it. Listen to these words from Colossians. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must forgive. This doesn't sound like a formula for protecting yourself from feeling or being seen. It sounds like a way of getting us so close together and so involved with each other that we can't help but feel and be seen. But wait, there's more here. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony, and let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body. And be thankful. I love that. And be thankful part at the end. Are you crazy? Thank you for all of that. All that potential hurt and that judgment and disappointment and rejection. Thankful for that? God says, yeah. God says, that's where life happens. I think it's time to meet Brené Brown. If you don't know her from the stuff we've done with her here in worship or in group life, Brené Brown is a researcher in the social sciences, and she has grew up being a person who wanted to be able to calculate everything and take care of all the messiness of life with empirical statistics. And she took her ability to measure everything to drown out the thing that bothered her most, and that was vulnerability. But the problem is, when she studied it, it turned on her and it began to teach her something that made her let go of that world of certainty.
What has been the most surprising to me is the people that have reached out to me the most are like, you know, Fortune 200 companies. People want to bring me in. And I think, you know, I'm hopeful, but at the same time, this is not something that you're going to be able to parlay into some kind of trick. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
you can't fake
this, and so, or you can't change it. You can't turn it into a business model. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and this has been very controversial about my work, especially with the communities I come from. I don't think you can do this without spirituality. You know, I just don't think you can. And I may have a broader definition of spirituality than a lot of people, but you know, for me, spirituality is just this deeply held belief that we're inextricably connected to each other by something greater than we are, and something that's about love and compassion. And for me, that's God.
Here's what we need to learn. Vulnerability means to feel. Vulnerability means to be seen. To be seen for who we really are, even though it hurts, even though we risk not being deemed worthy of love and acceptance, vulnerability keeps on loving. Vulnerability is this crazy thing. It never behaves quite the way we think it ought to. It's kind of like being stuck on a lifeboat out in the middle of the ocean with no food, no water, no way to get yourself anywhere, no way to let anybody know where you are, and then to make the impossible worse, add a tiger to that lifeboat. Vulnerability squared. I mean, there is no way. And just when you think it's become so impossible that there's no way you can go on, you realize that without that tiger, you might not make it at all.
I never thought a small piece of shade could bring me so much happiness. That a pile of tools, a bucket, a knife, a pencil might become my greatest treasures, or that knowing Richard Parker was here might ever bring me peace. In times like these, I remember that he has as little experience with the real world as I do. We were both raised in a zoo by the same master. Now we've been orphaned, left to face our ultimate master together. Without Richard Parker, I would have died by now. My fear of him keeps me alert. Tending to his needs gives my life purpose.
Pi admitted his vulnerability and found life in it. But who needs vulnerability? Jesus certainly didn't. I mean, Jesus was a busy guy. He had important work. He should have been focusing on the big stuff, not the little stuff. I mean, he should have had people around him, like all the other kings and important people the world did. Secret service that insulated him from all the people, from all the hurts, from all the details, all that stuff, so that he could be about the big stuff. But he didn't. There's this great story about Jesus. He's been traveling and teaching and healing and doing whatever, all that stuff that he does with his disciples 24/7, no rest at all. And finally, they just need to get away, and so they get in a boat to cross a lake to show up someplace where no one knows they're going to be. But people see him go, and by the time they arrive on the other side, the hordes of people are already there waiting for him. And this is what the story tells us Jesus does. As Jesus went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Jesus had compassion. That word in Greek refers to your guts. It's the same word as you use for your innards, that place inside you that gets all knotted and twisted when you feel. And you either have to do something about it, or you have to pretend it's not there and hope it goes away. Jesus felt it. Jesus was vulnerable. You see, we don't like to do that. We don't like to feel that. So to avoid being vulnerable, we numb ourselves. But the problem is, when we numb ourselves, we lose joy. Brené Brown goes to great lengths to teach us that we cannot selectively numb our emotions. When we numb ourselves through drugs, through rage, through withdrawal, through abuse, anything that we do in order to numb us of our feelings so that we don't feel hurt, so we don't feel disappointment, so that we don't feel the exclusion, we also numb our ability to feel that positive stuff. We numb our ability to feel joy, to feel gratitude, to know peace, to know satisfaction. Another thing that we do to avoid feeling vulnerable is that we seek self-reliance. And the problem is, when we seek self-reliance, we lose connection. Society tells us life is about being self-reliant. Stand on your own two feet. I know this is incredibly true for men, and I think it's really true for women in some ways as well. But we aren't supposed to depend on anyone. We're supposed to control everything ourselves, even our feelings. That's what our heroes do in the movies, after all. And the only thing it really teaches us is to not know how to deeply connect with other people. I'm not really old enough to remember this quite myself, but what I learned about early humans was that they lived in small bands of people and were constantly at warfare with all the other small bands of people around them. And the assumption was that the ones that had the most recent strategies for warfare or who had developed the latest technology and weaponry were the ones who survived and passed on their genes to us. But the truth is, that isn't how it happened. Those aren't the ones who survived. It wasn't the ones who were the least vulnerable who survived, but the ones who were able to develop the best alliances, the ones who were able to communicate and connect with other people and develop larger groups of people. They're the ones who passed their genes on to us and survived. When you think about our cities today, what is most remarkable about the 21st century city isn't all the technology that's in it, although there's an awful lot of it. What's really amazing about our cities is that we're all able to be here and to get along pretty well. That's amazing. Another thing that we've learned to do is to seek certainty. But when we seek certainty, what we do is we lose truth and we lose mystery. We accept something less, something smaller, something wooden that we can hold in our little human hand, squeezing God out with our certainty and truth right along with it. And that old line used by church all too often about it's a mystery when no good reason is able to be put forward for why something is believed or why something is practiced that is an otherwise inexplicable tradition. Well, that is not helpful. The truth is that mystery is more than just saying we don't understand something. Mystery is saying that even things that we do understand are so deep that we can never fully comprehend everything that it's about, and that they lead us to greater and deeper mysteries that teach us harder and more difficult lessons about life. I think it's time to hear from Brené Brown again.
Here's the thing. The best way for anybody to make money, not just the faith communities, but businesses, is to sell certainty. I mean, that's, you know, people love that stuff. But, you know, you have them hook, line, and sinker. If you'll sell them, you know, certainty, you'll sell, if you believe this, this is going to happen, period. If, you know, it's parenting the same way. You buy, you know, you have a parenting expert that says, do these three things, your kids will stay safe, sleep through the night, make friends, and go to Stanford. You know, people are going to buy that. So people love certainty. And so you have seen a lot of faith communities cash in on that. That we have the answers, and here, you know, and so then they do. But my belief is that faith minus vulnerability, when you set, you know, equals fundamentalism and extremism. When you can't hold space for the questions, you bankrupt faith by definition.
To keep from being vulnerable, another thing that we're taught to do is to avoid making mistakes. But when we avoid making mistakes, we lose the ability to discover. We lose discovery. Which do you want? To never make a mistake or discover something wonderful? The world tells us to do both, but you can't do both. You do one or the other. The greatest discoveries in this world took uncountable mistakes to get there. And even the simplest discoveries take at least our willingness to risk making a mistake in it. The last piece about escaping vulnerability that I want to talk about is a hard one. And that is that we try to run from death to avoid vulnerability. But when we run from death, we lose life. We don't need faith. We don't need religion to teach us this. Although when it's honest, faith should be teaching us this. Life itself teaches us this.
He's got this, because my straightforward faith is basically I believe God is love, right? And it makes total sense to me, yeah, that Jesus would have to be the Son of God, because people would want love to be like unicorns and rainbows. And so then you just send Jesus and people go, oh my God, love is hard, love is sacrifice, love is, you know, eating with the sick, love is breaking bread with people that, you know, that, you know, love is trouble, love is rebellious, love is... And so I was listening to this Leonard Cohen song, and it said, love is not a victory march, love is a cold and broken hallelujah. And to me, that made sense of that. That totally, I got it. That, you know, when I listened to that, I'm like, love is not easy. Love is not like hearts and bows. Love is very, controversial, really.
You are vulnerable. Vulnerability is not an option. You're going to have to do something about it. There are lots of ways of protecting yourself, pretending that you aren't, but you do not get to choose whether you are fundamentally, as a person, vulnerable or not. You are. No man is an island. No one lives forever. Wealth does not equal happiness. Fame is fleeting. No strategy wins every time, and no answer solves every riddle. God is asking you to not be certain, to embrace not knowing and mystery, to take risks and not know how it's going to turn out, to do the right thing, to love the way your heart wants to, even when it might cost you greatly. Vulnerability is not an option. There is no path through life without it. Brené Brown talks quite a bit about how we try to perfect our children and how we like to see them as perfect, as if somehow doing that is going to save them from vulnerability in their life. But children are born for struggle. They are designed to survive against odds. And we do them a great service and we take those skills and we strip those skills away from them. When we look at our little babies and say to ourselves, like we've been taught, oh, how perfect they are. They aren't perfect. And we know it. And when we tell them that over and over again, and then we live their lives trying to perfect them all the way and trying to make sure everything is working out for them, all we're doing is setting them up for failure. Because when they look deep inside themselves, the way that they know themselves, they realize they aren't as perfect as we've been telling them all along. And they start wondering if other people see how imperfect they are, if they will still be loved, if they will still be accepted. What we should be telling our children, is, you aren't perfect. You are going to struggle. You are going to make mistakes, and that's okay. We love you anyway. We accept you the way you are. And by the way, we want to be on this journey every step of the way with you. Here's why this is so important. This is the deal. And this is a warning. On the other side of vulnerability is more vulnerability. This is not something that we just get through. Yeah, we do get better at it, sort of. There are times of life that seem to have to deal with a lot more of it than other times, but vulnerability isn't an experience. Vulnerability is what it means to be human. And as tough as that is, as hard as it is, within it, it holds our greatest potential.
And, you know, it's interesting because my return to faith was definitely around that breakdown. That's when I went, you know, but I went for the wrong reasons. I really went because I'm like, this is hard and this hurts. And in all the midlife unraveling books, they say go back to church. That's what everybody does. So I went back to church thinking that it would be like an epidural, like it would take the pain away. Like I would just replace research with church, you know, and then church would make the pain go away. And then, I write in this book I'm working on right now that it was, you know, faith in church was not an epidural for me at all. It was like a midwife who just stood next to me saying, push. It's supposed to hurt a little bit, you know.
Your job isn't to get through it. Your job is to learn to live in it. You can't do that alone. You aren't supposed to do that alone. That's why God created us for community and hardwired us for connection and called us to be the body of Christ in this world.
If you imagine some people sitting around a meal and one person's died in the family and nobody talks about it, they're not freed from the suffering. They're oppressed by it. But if someone then starts to talk about how they miss Johnny and, you know, how, you know, funny story, and someone else starts to cry and another person laughs, then talking about their brokenness doesn't destroy them. It actually helps free them from its sting. But not trying to think that there's something that will take away all the pain and the suffering and the brokenness. When I do that, I reduce God to an idol, a product, a dead thing that will somehow fix everything and make everything right. God is not found in the running away from brokenness. God is found in the midst of brokenness. God is found in the embrace of the world. Not in seeking God out there, but rather as the ground of our being. That's why the crucifixion is so interesting to me, is that we are being invited to participate in that experience of the loss of the thing that we think will make us complete, which you hear in the crucifixion when Christ cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? The temple curtain is ripped in two. We die and we rise up different. We die and we rise up different. We die and we rise up different. We're now God is where two or three are gathered together. God is where we love. God is where we give water to those who are thirsty, food to the hungry, clothes to the naked, where we reach out to our neighbour, where we try to act with gratitude, with grace, with love, with mercy and joy.
To be vulnerable is to die over and over again, and to be born over and over again. Jesus didn't come to tell us that everything is going to be okay. Jesus didn't come to show us the path to earthly success. Jesus came to show us how to die. And by doing that, how to really live. Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Here's the question. Are you willing to be you? Are you willing to feel, even though what you feel might hurt? And are you willing to be seen, even though that person that is seen might be judged as unworthy or unacceptable, not good enough? I mean, there's an easier way to go through life, especially at work, school, places where you're with friends who don't know you so well, those places where authenticity maybe isn't picked up on so quickly, or maybe it's not even expected. You can save yourself a lot of pain. You can have a lot of certainty that way. But there will be a trade-off. You can't practice that way of living in the world and not lose your ability to truly feel and to be who you really are. Yeah, you do save yourself some hurt, some pain, and some disappointment, but you also lose the ability to know joy and to know peace and to find fulfillment.
I thought faith would say, I'll take away the pain and discomfort, but what it ended up saying is, I'll sit with you in it. And I never thought until I found it that that would be enough. But it's perfect. You know, it's just, I don't feel alone in it anymore.
God isn't the fairy godmother that makes sure everything turns out okay. That would be nice, but bad things do happen. No, God is that midwife who takes you from death to life. And God uses the church to do the birthing. The church, not the institution, not a building, but the church, the people who understand themselves as being called by God to be God's presence in the world. Last week I talked about two things that I said are critical for us to be living in true relationship with each other. And those are these truths that, one, God shows us how to live in true relationship, and second, God empowers us to live in true relationship. I believe it. I believe God gives us, even our puny little minds, a glimpse underneath the fabric of existence so that we can get an idea about how things really work. In fact, even what really work means. I also believe that God is empowering us and is using us to make that difference in each other's lives. And God works in lots of ways in the lives of people, but we are one of those ways. And the fact that we are sharing the same journey, that we have the same hopes, that we're willing to ford the same dangerous waters, that we're asking the same questions, means that we are able to be so much more powerful in each other's lives. We need to be that. Relationships are hard. Life is hard, but it has so much promise, and we know that as well. And we do it so much better together. Take the risk. Would you pray with me? God, you've been hearing this whole thing. You're up on all the insecurities, the worries, the hurts, all of it, in each and every one of us. I guess it's time to trust you with it. Some of us, probably most of us, came here because we thought you'd fix it, you'd fix us, make everything better. But you died on the cross and you rose up different. You ask us to carry our crosses and follow you.
Be with us in the myriad deaths that we die each day. Surround us with your people, your hope, your strength, and raise us up over and over again. Help us to be new. We want to know how to love each other. We want to know how to live together, how to build this world together, how to experience joy that knows no bounds. Teach us. Empower us. Be with us. Amen.